welcome to episode 47 of Future Library. It's another slightly odd one for the listeners and for me and for the guests, because as you can see, if you're watching the video version of it, I'm going to wave at the camera, we're all in the same place again, and this happened. And the thing is, it's weird for us because we're waving at the camera, but because of feeling slightly self-conscious, we've actually hidden the video feed, so we can't see what's happening.
Blank page.
Yeah, so we're just looking at a blank Google page and waving at Google, which you can't see if you're listening or watching. Bit redundant to tell you all about that, but that's what I do every time, isn't it, listeners? So stop complaining. I've obviously got two guests with me today, and a cat. And Wikipedia has let me down.
Okay.
So I'm joined by Colin and Graham. Graham Donning from Manchester.
Originally from Burnley, but then Burnley. Lived in Manchester for a long time, now living in London.
And this is something that's actually going to... The next thing I'm going to say is going to feed into a bit of something that we were talking about yesterday, about doing interviews. Colin, don't know your surname.
Webster.
Colin Webster, there we go. Because we were talking about this, because Graham does his own show on...
NTS,
there you go. This is a good example. Yeah. He does a show on MTS, and we were talking about how sometimes it doesn't do enough research.
Yes.
and has to wing it. A good example.
More that I've decided just not to do off-site interviews, really, because I'm not very good at winging it either.
So. Is that kind of fine, winging it? Okay, because I've reached the point where I've done so many of these from various different podcasts that I can... just let my mouth keep going.
Yeah.
When my brain is going to going frantically. What do I say? What do I say? What do I say? What do I say? So, Colin Webster and Graham Donning.
Yes.
And where are you from?
I'm originally from Swindon, but I've lived in London for many, many years.
According to the comedy musician Mitch Benn, Swindon is the city of the future.
We were talking about this in the car, it's not a city.
Oh, well, he was wrong about that. He should have said town of the future.
Or maybe we were discussing
Metropolis
this,
of the future.
Yeah, because we were driving into Wolverhampton to play the gig last night, and it turns out Wolverhampton's a city.
It is.
And we were
discussing the criteria.
Yeah, the criteria for a city as opposed to a town, and I remember when I was a kid in Swindon and it applied to be a city, because it's quite big.
Yeah.
Well, comparatively, they failed. In their attempt to become a city.
Have they got a university?
No.
Have they got a cathedral?
No.
No city for you, then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's
the
not quite a city of the future. Yeah, because I think that's the criteria, isn't it? You have to either a cathedral or a university.
Right, I thought it was cathedral.
Yeah. It's one of the two, or both. Yeah. You've got both, and you're a mega city. Not like in Judge Dredd, though. But you can be like a high
city. Bolton's got both. I don't know whether that's a city or
should
not.
Be.
Must be.
We can find out.
Yeah.
Is Bolton a city? Let's find out.
This is a
bit of live Googling for the viewers now, which I'm guessing you might be able to see from here. So let's have a look. So is Bolton a city?
There's some small village in Devon somewhere that has a cathedral, and that's a city. Maybe only 300 people live there.
Yeah.
Now let's have a look. Oh, it says Bolton Town.
City of the past.
Let's see. It's a town, apparently.
Right. Hmm. There you go.
But it's a town in Greater Manchester. So, has it been absorbed into Manchester cityness?
Yeah.
Who knows? So there we go. So yeah. So this is a good example of you making things up as you go along, which is good. So yeah, you played a show in Wolverhampton last night.
Yep.
I'm skipping slightly ahead here, and it will skip back to telling us about the music and stuff. For the sake of the listeners and viewers, I was actually supposed to be playing the show last night, and I had a realization when I arrived at the venue. I was just like, I hate playing gigs, and it was a bit of a weird realization for me because. There's this kind of program part of my brain tells me that I should like playing gigs.
Yeah.
For viewers of the video, they'll be able to see the table's just been invaded by our cats. So if you're wondering what that is, I've taken the collar off one of them so it doesn't jingle, but the other one's still got a jingle. He's not too bad, and he's walking all over your records, but hopefully that's not a problem. So I decided not to play, which was probably quite wankish of me. But
well, it's not like there were... loads of people there to watch anyway, but
there weren't hordes going small glass ghost, small glass ghost, and then nobody had to come out and go I'm afraid to say, Small Glass Guy was just cancelled. And they didn't rampage and, you know, wreck the venue or anything like that.
Riot
so,
in the street.
Yeah. They, no, downtown Wolverhampton wasn't trashed last night. No.
I think, according to the promoter, he was very apologetic that there weren't as many people as was expected, because I think, as Wolverhampton is a city, as we're aware, it does have a university, is that right?
Yeah,
so,
a big
yeah,
one.
And being that it's the Easter vacation from university, there weren't any of the expected students there. Apparently they stopped the university campus transport and things like that as well, so it's literally, there's, you know, cut off the blood supply of the students.
It's ridiculous. It's, yeah, I mean, partly it's ridiculous that they do that to the students, but also, I'm not dissing the promoter, but you'd think he'd know that.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I think I offered him the date, though, so maybe I should have done my research as well. But
not your fault, let's blame a third party, it's fine. So,
but, I mean, it was fun anyway, it's got a really nice sound system in there, so that was nice to play with a massive sub-speaker kind of rattling my ribcage behind me and things.
Because you were worried that it was going to be just like the bar's little kind of...
Yeah, well, I weren't sure.
Yeah, I was really expecting little pub speakers.
Yeah,
it was all right.
Yeah, so this was the Quadrant in Wolverhampton, which has opened and closed many times over the years. Maybe we'll stay open this time.
Yeah.
That'd be good. That'd be good. So, yes, so I was supposed to have played, and I didn't. And it also meant that I didn't see you guys play, so which is a bit shit as well. So I can't kind of say, well, at the gig last night you did this, because I didn't see you at the gig last night. But viewers will be able to see. We have a table full of gear set up, which we will come to in a minute. Yep. You're on tour together.
Yep.
So, tell us a bit about that.
We're playing Manchester tonight in the Penthouse, and then Liverpool on Sunday at the Ship and Mitre, and then back to London on Tuesday.
So they knew the Dog House.
The Dog House in Kennington, South London.
Should point out to the listeners that if you're going, oh good, I'm in Manchester, I'm going to go see this gig tonight.
Yeah.
By the time the podcast comes out, you're about 5 weeks too late. Or 3 weeks too late, or something like that. So, just let you know, listeners, this isn't live, listeners.
That's a bit redundant, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, it's nice to know. It's, you know, that's something I should have told you about before. Because usually I say to people, don't worry about plugging anything that's coming up in the next day, because it's going to be several months ahead or weeks ahead or whatever.
So, but I mean, basically, the talk came about. We were invited to play in a kind of ensemble together independently. We didn't really know each other, by another promoter, Kevin Quigley. And that was a couple of years ago now, for, I think it was a spring equinox or summer solstice event. There was a kind of, had an element of kind of sun worship in it, and we were in a kind of pseudo Sun Ra band doing sort of free improv. So that's how we met. And then a few times over the last couple of years, we've gone and recorded down in Colin's studio, which is in a kind of garage lock-up space in South London. And yeah, just got on well, didn't we? I think musically we kind of connected quite well. So we've had an album that came out a month or two, six weeks ago.
Yeah, start of March it came out.
On Linear Obsessional Records, which, yeah, it was just turntable and saxophones. And then we kind of just released on Colin's label, Raw Tonk, a kind of sister album of saxophones and Walkmans.
I was really hoping you were going to say, you know, we did the album that's turntables and saxophone. We've just released the sister album, which is saxophone and turntables. Like a jazz blues jazz festival.
Well, you know.
It's only a matter of time.
And the Linear Obsessional one, I'm guessing that came about through knowing Richard Sanderson of...
That's right, yeah. Well, in fact, it came about through having the recordings and pimping them around to as many labels as we could, really, and we ended up going with Richard's label.
Yeah, and it's a kind of free or pay what you buy kind of pay what you buy. That doesn't make any sense, does it? Pay what you want kind of release, isn't it?
For the download, yeah. So he's also done a short run physical release.
Those aren't free. He's not going to give those away. He's not a charity.
Is there one in the box somewhere?
There's a box behind. Is it the one with
the red
weird
one? Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have some of these cases. I had cases like this for a a release that I never did.
Right.
But they were like a DVD case that had a children's kangaroo DVD in.
Brilliant.
Like sort of called, I don't know, Kangaroo in a Green Case or something, the video was probably called. So I have a bunch of them ready. So this is at Eastergate. For listeners, I'm holding a red plastic case with a carrying handle. That's useful. Yep. People go out and want to take it with them. And it says... I'll read what it says on the back. It says, Colin Webster, tenor and baritone saxophones, Graham Dunning, turntable, mixture and dubplate. See, if I'd read that first, I'd have been able to say, no, I'm talking to Graham Dunning. No, you play turntable, mixture and dubplate, don't you? And I would look very professional then. And it was recorded on the 12th of January and the 15th of August in 2012 in that storage facility you just mentioned in South London. And it was live with no overdubs or cuts. And you dug up... Oh, this was when you... Yeah, I'll come to this in a minute then. And it's on Linear Recessional. He's up to the 50th release. Good God, he's churning these out, isn't he? Yeah. So...
And I think this is the... Ours is the first in a kind of mini-series of duo releases as well. So I think there's...
Chuckle Brothers next, isn't it?
Yeah. On turntable and
and then after
I think
that,
the next one's a saxophone and electronics duo, but I forget.
It's Little and Large. Little and Large doing that one. Oddly, out of the three releases, you're the only non-comedy duo.
Yes,
doing that, which is very peculiar.
Depends how you look at it.
Well, maybe a different type of comedy, maybe a darker comedy. So that's. I'm going to hold it up so the people watching the video version can see it. Hello, there it is, and it's got a back as well as things that are three-dimensional do. It has many sides, it's faceted. So
it's got stuff inside it as well. If you look inside,
I'm hoping it's got a disc inside it.
Let's
open this up then. I'll try to do this without breaking it. So these are the shellac pieces. So tell us about the shellac pieces, because you had the Ray Gardens.
So it's basically how it came about was that Richard likes to put in some bits and bobs, really, for want of a better word, for each of his releases. So a recent one was Viv Corringham had an album called Gum and Butts, which was a series of vocal improvisations done out in public places and then recorded with a portable field recorder, so kind of very street sound related. And it's called Gum and Butts, and it featured, you know, you would get a stick of chewing gum with it, so he kind of likes to put in these little objects. So he asked us if there was something related that we could kind of put in with our release. And the front cover came about because when me and Colin had a meeting about the album in general, we were about to decide upon things like what we would use for the front cover, and the screensaver of my laptop, which we were looking at the time, had a scan from a flatbed scanner of lots of broken pieces of records. And Colin remarked it reminded him of a photo he'd taken recently of an ice floe on a TV screen, which is what we actually use for the front cover. So there's that connection to these pieces of broken records already, and it kind of fitted in with the kind of staccato broken sounding sort of timbres that we use within the recordings. We decided then for the object we could use these pieces of broken records, and they originally came about from I did a residency in the Ray Garden, which is a former industrial space near the Custard Factory in Digbeth in Birmingham. And that space happened to have a record warehouse for Philips Records at one time in its history, which has long since been demolished. As a result of that, within the ground, there were all these bits of broken records. So my residency was based on a kind of archaeological dig, and I collected together lots of bits of records, part of which was this, the output of it was this record, which is kind of a mosaic of these broken pieces reconstituted into resin, casting resin, which I then used to make sounds with. And got another record pressed of that, which has since been buried somewhere else. So it's cyclical. And that's, in fact, that was another project. I got that cut onto a dub plate and buried there's a project of someone wanting to bury artists' work, so that's due to be dug up again in summer this year.
So oh, so it's going to be dug up by the artist. It's not going to be one of these things where you're just hoping that a future version of yourself would go, oh, I've dug up this record that appears to be made up of fragments of records.
They'll be digging it up and, exhibiting stuff from, making an exhibition. I think lots of people have submitted things, and it's about decay and all the rest of it. Anyway, I'm rambling a bit.
No, that's absolutely fine. So, I mean, when you've the record that you've buried, I take it it's been buried in one piece?
Well, yeah, that's an actual dub plate. So I made a kind of sound collage using these sounds and recorded it onto a fresh kind of whole record, and that's buried in one piece.
And you're hoping it'll come up in one piece?
Yeah, I hope it'll be... Well, I'll see what it looks like. I'm hoping I can play it with... You know, with it slightly caked in mud and see what it sounds like.
So you're not going to get it and clean it off and then...
Well, I'll see. Maybe I'll clean it.
A little bit. Try not to break your record player too badly. So, you've got a cat joined you there as well. So you've got that release. And have you got any other releases that you... Because you were saying about the sister release.
Yeah, that came out last weekend, actually, on my label, Raw Tonk. And like Graham said, it's Walkmans this time, not record players and not turntable.
And also kind of amplifying cymbal, I think.
Oh yeah, a bit and cassette box as well on one track. Tape box.
So you're playing those things, and you play saxophone.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about what you've been doing on your own over the years, Colin, or with other people. Your kind of thing.
Yeah,
wasn't very eloquent, was it? That kind of thing.
Got two cats attacking.
Yes, we're surrounded by cats. So the listeners will be able to hear cats jumping around the table and the cables and
the microphone.
And the microphone. Hopefully that'll be a wonderful stereo treat for them.
Yes.
Yeah. They'll go, what's that sound?
An immersive sonic environment.
Oh, it's like being there with a cat jumping in my ear. So, tell us a bit about your stuff.
Lots of different things, really, ranging from some solo, done some solo releases, which is probably, if you listen to the stuff we do together, how I play on the solo stuff is pretty similar to that. And then, do some more kind of free jazz things with a drummer called Mark Hollab, and play with a very loud, noisy band called Dead Neanderthals as well, who are from Holland, who that's kind of I guess it's somewhere on the border between free jazz and noise, I would say, but played on acoustic instruments. It's a pretty kind of relentless kind of project.
Very intense
Yeah, very hard work. Lots of different things, basically.
You keep yourself you keep kind of in to the whole I'm trying to work out how to word it while I'm pulling crap out of this cat's eyes.
The best way.
Which, if anybody has owned Siamese cats, they'll know that they're actually very happy to just let you pull crap out of their eyes. So I've lost my train of thought now. There was something I was going to say, and then I got distracted by eye crap.
Is that a new Apple product?
The eye crap. that was it. So you could keep doing multiple projects, which I think is always a good idea.
I don't know why I do lots of different projects, but I think probably to because I find it interesting. Keep myself entertained.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lots
yeah.
of different things.
Are you on to like your fourth release on the label now?
Fifth.
Yeah,
fifth one.
That's a good line, I think. I like the way you've taken that. See, you can tell that Graham's also does interviews himself. Save, Graham. Tell us a bit about the label.
It's called Raw Tonk. It's it kind of started. I was talking to someone else the other day about it. It started a bit, not really by accident, but just out of convenience. I did a recording with the drummer Mark Hollab, and was sort of, as you do, shipping it around to different labels, and it ended up in that situation where, you know, some people were interested, some people could do it, but not necessarily anytime soon. And I thought, well, you know, why don't I just do it myself? And I did, and then it just kind of sat there, didn't really do anything else after that until I was almost the same thing happened with last Dead Neanderthals album, and that kind of came in a bit of collaboration with another label, and yeah, and then a couple more down the line now. A couple of weeks ago, I released the first CDR that I'm actually not playing on, so now it's like a proper label, putting out other people's music as opposed to just my own stuff. So yeah, that's kind of a new thing. And then obviously the thing with Graham, and then coming up a few more releases of other people's music, which is quite a new thing for me. I'm gonna see how that goes, because I didn't really plan to be kind of a label in that way, but yeah, that's how it's come about. So,
and you've not signed the former singer of Noasis?
Not yet.
No.
But you know, if he gets in touch. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've heard that he's a bit of an Andrew WK kind of figure. But, he's got the he has the fingers in many pies. On one hand, he's the fake Liam Gallagher, and on the other hand, he kind of plays kind of extreme improv.
Yeah.
With bits of wood. He just stands in the street and
hangs around
very gently.
Out in Glasgow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Almost silently rubbing pieces of wood together. Contact mic so that on a long cable that goes back to his house where he records it, but people in the street can't hear him. They think he's just a tramp rubbing bits of wood together. Yeah. Possibly. Of course, the listeners aren't going to understand why we've talked about him either. And you know what? I'm going to leave it that way. So. Obviously, there's a table full of stuff, but before we get to that, I'm trying to think if there's anything else we should discuss in the interview form. This is a weird one, because obviously being in the same room is unusual, and slightly discomforting, in a way. Not in a bad way.
We're
it's not like...
sat back to back or something, so at least we weren't looking at each other.
It's a call centre technique for teaching people to do... calls.
Oh, really?
When you're doing training, sit your back to back, so one person's the person calling in and one person's the person answering. It's not so effective when you do dietary inquiries.
I worked for Ticketmaster, I realised I'd been there for too long when I got on the bus and said, "Hello, welcome to Ticketmaster," rather than asking for a bus ticket, because I'm kind of so used to going through the script all the time.
So you worked for Ticketmaster? Yes. I need to know a bit more about this.
Well, just as a student, really, or in fact when I dropped out of university and thought that I wasn't ever going to get a degree, I went to work in a call centre for Ticketmaster. Yeah, it was all right.
How long did you last?
A few months, I can't remember. It was okay because everyone else there was a student or university dropout, so I actually made some quite good friends there and had a good time.
Was it one of those things, though, that the day that you decided to go was just one day and you sat down and you went, "Oh, fuck this"? Or did it slowly build up?
I can't remember
now. Was it the day you got on the bus and said...
Well, that's the beginning of the end.
Did the driver look at you and go, "You've worked there too long, my friend"?
I don't know. You do feel like you're part of a machine, really, and if they could get a computer to do that job, then they would,
I've been there myself. So, for anybody who's only experience of the call centre life is BBC Three's The Call Centre, or BBC Two now, with Nev and his Welsh third best call centre in Swansea. I think it's funny as fuck. It's like, it really is something out of The Office. Nev and the third best call centre in Swansea. It's not even the third best call centre in Wales. It's just in Swansea. They're not really like that. They're kind of, they are kind of like that, but they're also... less kind of clowning about and
more treating you like you're a school child, really, and kind of penalising you for being slightly late. It used to be that if you're going to be, say, 20 minutes late, it would be better to call in sick than to be late. And
I remember pointing this out when I worked at Virgin in their call centre. If you were a minute late or even 30 seconds late, they'd pull you off the phone for 20 minutes to have a go at you.
Right,
So, Watson, you're now 20 minutes late onto the phone.
Yeah.
Why don't you just let it go and just say, don't do it again, or talk to them later in the day when it's quieter.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, and you sort of kind of have to ask permission to go for a shit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of silly. I'm glad I don't do that anymore. It's quite nice.
Yeah.
So, But which actually is quite neat, because you moved from Manchester to London.
Yeah.
What caused that? Were you chasing the bright lights?
Yep, streets are paved with gold.
Yeah.
It was just time for a change. I was in Manchester for about 11 years and kind of realised that I had as many friends in Manchester as I did in London, really. And, so I just fancied a change, really. It's still exciting, you know. I like living down there because there's loads going on, you know, and there's loads of opportunities. And,
So I don't think I could move to London because partly I hate London, so that's one problem. And I'm hideously poor at networking. Yeah. So I think what would happen would be is I'd become depressed and bitter.
Right.
Or I should probably qualify that more depressed and bitter than I already am.
Yeah.
You know, having carrying quite a large amount of depressed bitterness around with me at all times.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a chance that I'd become intolerably depressed and bitter. But you know, there's no disrespect to Londoners. Well,
No. I mean, I think everyone goes through that when they live in London. Anyway.
I think you have to plan ahead and you have to try quite hard to do networking and things. You know, it's less easy in London to phone someone up and go for a quick pint because it might take you, you know, an hour to get somewhere where you can meet to do that.
There's a lot of people and you can end up spending most of your time on your own or on a tube. And not really seeing anyone. But yes, good place though. I mean, I go through phases of hating it and loving it, and I've just finished a phase of hating it.
Yeah,
starting to like it again.
Yeah.
So
you ticked it off for this year.
Yeah.
Oh, I've only got 3 more days of the hating it phase to go. I can start liking it again. Yes, booking tickets for We Will Rock You. I'm going down Covent Garden and I'm going to get my face drawn by a caricaturist. It's going
to
be great.
Yeah, I mean, if you live in London, generally you try to go to see We Will Rock You at least once a week.
At least once a week. I think that's the real mayor of London, Boris Johnson, made that like a rule?
Compulsory.
Keeps the economy ticking on.
Yeah. We Will Rock You. But I think also because I believe that We Will Rock You set in some kind of dystopian future, where the songs of Queen are the only method of showing rebellion, and I think he sends the Londoners along to watch. So that they can come out and go, oh, it's not so bad here.
So bad.
London's all right. Yeah. Oh, only 4 CCTV cameras for every one of me. That's fine. There are 100 in the show. So, and wasn't it, Ben Elton? Was he responsible for We Will Rock You?
Yeah, I think he was.
Man, he's got shit, hasn't he, over the years?
I can't believe, really.
I mean, I kind of think, looking back on him, I don't think he was actually ever particularly great, but...
But at least...
He had some credibility, didn't he?
Yeah, he did at one time. Yeah. At least he was angry before, you know.
Yeah. Just goes to show that comedians of that kind of era, you can go one of 2 ways. You either go the Stephen Fry route, where you remain with some dignity and some credibility. And you can still do all the really popular shit on the telly and become a national treasure and everybody loves you. Or you could be like Ben Elton. Make the worst things imaginable and be responsible for We Will Rock You.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know if he's done anything else. Do you think he sits kind of going through his record collection?
I don't know, going, what could he do next? Erasure.
Oh, The Circus. Let's make an album of that. That'll be good. Oh, Hotel California. Has anybody done that? Oh, I could get Madonna in that, couldn't we? Oh. Yeah, this could have picked the shit out of Bros, their first album. Because nobody's made a rock opera about Bros. Which reminds me of something I saw on Facebook yesterday, that somebody had posted something from Viz with Bros saying, Bros asked the question, when will I be famous? I can't answer that. Well, I can. It's 1987 to 88. So, anyway, as I said, you've got some stuff here. So we're going to do something slightly different for the pod. You're going to play some music.
Yep.
I think so.
And that means that for the listeners, there's going to be a brief moment of Mike Handledge
fumbling.
Yeah, Mike fumbling while I move the mic onto a chair. So I'm going to do that now. People watching the video version are getting it through a different mic, so that's it. But here goes the. I have to apologise, listeners, but here's the fumblage. It's happening now. Fumblage. Mic fumblage. That's going to really mess up the levelating agent. Let's pull the cable through. There we go. I'll put the mic just there so it's still in stereo. Your sound source is over there, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, let's see.
But also over here acoustically.
There, okay, so I'll move that to there then, and hopefully it'll all work. And if it doesn't, then, oh, fuck it, it'll work. It'll be fine. So listeners, either enjoy this or go, Alex, you fucked up the recording of that. So we're going to hear a bit of Colin and Graham. And if you're watching the video version, which for the first and maybe only time actually has moving images, hello, you'll be able to see some of what's going on. And I think with the way the angle is, you've got double Grahams. Because you've got a mirror of Graham as well. So that's exciting for you, isn't it? So I'll step out of the way and let you get on. So but the first track you're doing is We Will Rock You from that famous musical that the Londoners like. Yeah.
Thank you.
Kind of end point, which is always the awkward moment of the end of a piece of improvisation when you're recording it. You can never know whether it's actually finished or not. Let's move some fumbling stuff back.
And who was it, Colin, you quoted before as saying you should always be looking for the end?
John Stevens.
John Stevens, the drummer. Yeah.
So you start playing and you should always look for the end straight away.
That's the...
That's one way of doing it.
So you could start, couldn't you? You could just go...
Massive.
More mic fumbling. I'm tempted to do that actually at some show at some point.
Pretty much what you did last night.
That was my performance. There you go.
Yeah. That's taking it to a new level.
Yeah, man.
It's like, don't look for the end, look for the way home. Yeah. And, like, if your way home is before you've left, then...
Yeah, it was meta. It was a special kind of new performance. Yeah, yeah. So the album stuff, I think, is similar to that.
Yeah, I mean, it changes every time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I think some of the stuff we've recorded in the studio to get a certain. I think the first album, what I like about it is the fact that, like, the stuff from Turntable is kind of taken straight in through the desk and on. You know, very close kind of stereo, so you get all the kind of intricate sort of record crackle sounds. And then when we recorded, we wore headphones and recorded the sax in the room with a decent mic, so you get very sort of close sound from the sax as well, but within the room sound. So it kind of sounds a bit disjointed, but at the same time, I think it gives it a very individual sound, you know. So yeah, some of the CD stuff sounds different because of the way it's been recorded, I think.
Yeah.
But, and yeah, I think in the nature of improv, it's different every time, depending on the circumstances of, you know, the venue, the PA, and all the rest of it.
I think that's important as well. If you're setting out to make improvised music, you should always try and make it different, because I know a lot of people, if you play a lot of gigs with the same person, a lot of improv gigs with the same person, you sort of start getting into a bit of a set pattern, and that's kind of going against the, like, if you're a purist, which
there's a confusing moment here, but yeah, hello Kat. This is
hello Kat.
We're mid podcast. Sorry, that's okay. All right, what's happened? Oh, they just finished for the day. Okay, cool. We'll see you then. Okay, bye. So for listeners, that was my wife phoning. And as everybody who's in a relationship knows, you must never ignore the phone call from the bar. So, yeah, sorry about that.
That's right. Yeah, no, I was just banging on about the purity of the improv and saying if you're doing a chain of gigs, you can easily fall into a pattern where you go, oh, you know, I'll start like this and then go like that.
Absolutely.
This will happen and that will happen, then you might as well just compose the music. So I think you have to really kind of make sure that you are keeping it you know, different. And
I think it's interesting for me, actually. This is probably the most I've played just with one other person, you know, and so I'm...
Yeah, it's unusual, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's good, though. It feels like you can start exploring different territory that, you know, if you're recording or, you know, playing together for the first time, then it's definitely a different feel than if you've played 10 gigs together. You
know? Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, with improvisation, I've said this to a lot of people that weren't doing improvisation, and trying to explain it to them, it's, to me, it's more about listening to what the other person's doing rather than to what you're doing. I think you... Good improvisation is where both parties or more are listening to everybody else and reacting to everybody else.
Yeah, it's vital.
Because, I mean, I've played with some people where, you know, I was expecting it just to be, you know, straight improvisation. They just weren't listening to anybody else at all. They just go off and it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, what's this?
Give Why me
is
a bit this? Of room, you know.
Yeah. Why is this person not listening and reacting to what's going on? They're just dicking about and that doesn't work. And I think...
It can work. I know what you mean. It's not right, but at the same time, if someone says this is my energy and this is my direction, it's kind of selfish. But then you can say, right, well, if that's the direction and it's just going to be all about going and not listening and not stopping, then you could all just go for it and not listen and not stop.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of that's something as well. But I know what you mean. It's not like how you might necessarily want it.
I think
but I've played with people before who like, they started listening and then they just decide, right, let's just drive, and that can be fun too.
To have that option as well, you know.
I think the risk is that you get into the kind of the fast show type thing where, what was it? Because they had jazz club, didn't they? And then they had, what was the one where it was the free jazz club or something like that?
We were discussing this in the car. There's a nice YouTube clip of all the clips
all of the Jazz Club nice.
In one go. It's about 10 minutes, and I watched it the other day and found it really funny, and so I posted it onto Facebook. And you know, obviously I'm friends with quite a lot of improvisers and people, and people who were, you know, started this discussion about it and how, oh, you know, it's set back free improvisation in the public's view by a good 20 years or something. It's done more damage than it has done good. But I think there's one part where it's basically John Cage is 4:33, you know, and it's actually really funny, but, you know, you'd have to know what you're talking about to actually do that, you know.
Was it Charlie Higson was doing that part?
I think
it was John What's-His-Face was the actual Jazz Club host, was it? John Thompson. And Charlie Higson's one of the main writers for the Fast Show, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was obviously in bands. I think the guys doing the Fast Show have got that background know all about it. And probably have got quite extensive record collections of kind of thing. So, because like you said, there's certainly, you'd be able to tell if it had been done in a way that was completely unaware of the source material. Because if it was just taking the piss and they were just going, free jazz, then you'd just go, I can tell it's rubbish. But I think,
like you saying, Colin,
some of the bits, I quite like. I haven't actually listened to it.
And it is it's pretty spot on. It's a shame there's nothing like that actually on telly.
Jazz
club. Yeah, it's true, isn't it?
We also discussed the possibility of setting up a free jazz only pirate station. Whether that would be successful or not.
I used to think to do with that is to get one of those little in-car broadcasting things, FM thing. And apparently you go into it and there's a single capacitor in it that limits the range.
Oh, really?
And you replace the capacitor with just one piece of wire.
Yeah.
And the range goes up from like 10 feet to like 100 yards or something.
Amazing, yeah.
Burns through the battery, so you have to then put it into a power source. But
you
can turn your car into a pirate radio source, and it becomes so powerful that it'll swamp surrounding cars on the normal radio. So
that's real radio piracy.
So you can drive round with your windows down, and everybody else's car is starting to do it. Pick a channel and go, So, there is a way of doing that. There's instructions on how to do it online. And you're handy with a soldering iron?
Yeah.
It's going to happen. He's got the look of the man he's going to do it.
That's what we're doing tomorrow.
Yeah. So, because I think what allowed those things to be sold in the UK, wasn't there a relaxation of broadcasting laws or something? Because it was classed as a radio station if you were broadcasting anything.
Right.
And I think then the range became an important issue. But I always quite liked the idea of a really limited range radio station.
Yeah.
You know, just like your street or something.
Yeah.
Put a couple of adverts up on the street, just say.
There was Max Neuhaus did a piece which was like a composition, I forget the name of it, it was in the 60s, where he set up various short-range transmitters along a street.
Yeah.
And you kind of played the composition yourself by tuning into the right frequency and driving up that street at the speed that you wanted to. So as you pass through the different zones, you get different kind of, I think, tones and rhythms coming in.
I've always wanted to do a show where instead of a PA, people brought little radios with them.
Yeah.
And you had a transmitter attached to your computer or whatever with your sound source.
Yeah.
And made people sit around the room with their little radios.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that people then, you know, all the different sounds of the speakers would make it different. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those ideas I've had that no doubt I'll never do. Well, somebody else will do it, and then somebody will become, then they'll be on the front cover of The Wire, and I'll be sort of going, damn you! Damn you, Graham Dunning!
They will now, when they listen to this podcast. Can you copyright an idea in a podcast?
That's why I copyright that idea. I've copyrighted it by recording it. I've got mechanical copyright on it. Because all the thing where you could do an outdoor show and you get people to bring their cars.
I remember reading about a sound system, like a kind of dance music thing, where it was like that was the idea, to set up a free party rave and everyone turn up in the cars, and then there's no equipment to confiscate if the police come and raid it, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing happening, officer. Obviously, listening to the radio. It's just, we've just got the same channel, and we'll have to go to the BBC and confiscate them.
You could disguise it as a car boot sale as well.
Yeah,
you could. Yeah.
I'd be totally career.
You could have a file of the other thing as well is you make sure that you have your setup so that if you see the police coming, you can switch signal straight away to Radio 1.
Yeah. Radio 4.
Just listening to one of our officers. Hello, listen to the show. Podcast. It's sailing by is on, officer. How can anyone complain about that? If you want to confiscate anything, you're going to have to go to London and arrest Sue Lawley and... Sue Lawley. So anyway, we'll draw things to a close in a moment, but what's coming up next for you guys? Obviously thinking, rather than thinking in the next 24 hours...
In the next few months. I mean, you'll have a few releases continuing, I guess.
Yeah, we've got a couple of things coming up. Now I try and think what they are. I'm doing a new solo CD, a few new things coming up on the label, new record with Dead Neanderthals, I'm touting for a label, and new duo record with Mark Hollop coming out in October, I think, so that's quite a while away.
We're going to do some recording tomorrow with Sam Underwood, who's a drone tuba player, so that'll be a trio, which, if it comes off anyway, we might be looking to get a release.
I'm looking forward to tuba, baritone and turntables.
Drone and turntables.
Yeah,
I've got a few bits. The project I'm doing at the moment is called Music by the Meter, where I set up kind of automated machines made of records looping and things like that, and then filled spools of tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a couple of things booked in whereby I'll be selling some music by the meter and kind of a little...
Do you have the table with the meter?
Yes,
that, that's you pull the one, it out, yeah. Chop it off. Here you go, sir.
Yeah, in a little bike, a little plastic bag. But also kind of setting up a bit like a key cutting kiosk, but music by the meter while you wait. So you can bring a tape and I'll fill it up with some abstract sounds and then bring it back to you.
Interesting. And you were mentioning last night that you've got a skip liberated lathe cutter.
So that's, it was a friend of mine, worked for a university and they were throwing it out. She just found it out the back, so rescued it. And it's, I think, 1940s HMV thing. It's an absolute beast. It's probably the heaviest thing I've ever lifted. Comes in two parts. And I'm missing a couple of cables and I've no idea whether, valves need replacing or whether it's going to work at all. But I recently stumbled across a shop in London which sells all the kind of pro audio equipment.
Yeah.
And basically, the front of it is just like a normal little shop. It's up in... up a Holloway sort of thing, so it's really out of the way, and then it's got a Dalek in the window and lots of like vintage audio equipment, so I thought I'll go and have a look in there. So I looked in and the guy said, I'll show you the main building if you want. So I went over and it's this big warehouse full of Neve consoles and kind of just all any kind of pro audio equipment from the last 50 years, and they do repairs and maintenance and all the rest of it.
I was hoping you were going to say it was full of Cybermen.
Well,
and you go, you've got a Dalek in the front, there's nothing but Cybermen back here. There's no continuity at all.
So he showed me around and then said, and I talked to him about the lathe machine and he said, we've got an old fella who specialises in them, so just waiting to give him a call when I've got some money together. So.
And what's it called, that shop? Because you can, we can promote it.
I can't remember for the life
of me. That's an odd name for a shop, so if you go to I can't remember for the life of me. They've got a lot of stuff.
I think it's on Hornsey Road. Their website... I can't remember. It's something really odd, like weirdfunkygear.com or something. But then they are like a more professional kind of pro audio sales. So anyway, he said basically there's two companies in London who service all the studios in pretty much in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So the one of those, which is on Hornsey Road, is the one.
That's the one. So if people want to find out about your stuff, then where do they go online?
GrahamDunning.com for my stuff.
And for yourself?
I think if you just Google Colin Webster saxophone, then you'll find stuff.
I like the way you added saxophone there, because I get the feeling if you don't add that, does something else come
There's a Welsh footballer from the 1950s who used to play for Man United.
See, for a long time, if you Googled me, there was nothing but me.
Yeah.
But now, there's a Canadian ice hockey player and an Australian fashion designer.
Yeah.
For me, you get a... barrister based in Essex,
right.
Called Graham Dunning, QC.
You see, I did try to approach the other two Alex Bottoms to get them on an episode of the podcast. Neither of them replied.
No, that's a shame.
It would have been good. Can you imagine having a ice hockey player and an Australian fashion designer being interviewed by somebody with the same name?
So, Alex Bottom.
Yeah. Who do you mean?
So, Australian Alex, tell me about this. So, I think that would have been good, but you know, some people just don't want to play the fun games of podcastage. The podcast game. So, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I'm kind of slightly confused as to end things when it's done this way. Listeners, I don't know whether the video one's going to be up at the same time this time, because it might be. So you might be, who knows. So people who've watched, thank you for watching. They're probably all sitting at home going, dear God, never do that again, Alex. Never. We don't want to see it. You've ruined it for me completely. I imagined it was in some kind of professional studio, and it's actually your house, and it's bloody hell. But there we go.
We can CGI that in later.
I'll paint all this green after the fact, and then refilm it, projecting it. That sounds like a lot of work. So, maybe I'll just cut you out in Photoshop, and I'll put like a busy lab in behind or something like that. That'll be good. So that all that's left to say then, I've just realised I've got a massive thing when the cat jumped up on me. I don't know if that'll be in the video, because there's a bit where I suddenly went, when she jumped on my lap. All that's left to say is a future library goodbye. Goodbye! Thank you for downloading this episode of Future Library. Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com and is hosted by myself, Alex Bottom. The podcast is free, but if you do want to show your appreciation, feel free to go along to alexbottom.co.uk and click through to music, where you'll be able to find things that you can buy, or go to asmallglassghost.co.uk where you can buy my latest music. Episodes come out when I feel like it, mostly weekly. But that's it, so thank you for listening.